The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Well, thank you very much for that, Wendy. As always, thanks for that wonderful disclaimer. Joining me in the studio right now are Rob Washburn, a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College, and Mr. Greg Ferrant. He is the manager of government policy and affairs for the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. They are the largest conservation-based organization in Ontario and the voice of anglers and hunters across the province. Now, Mr. Ferrant currently chairs the Canadian Firearms Advisory Committee that advises the federal government of public safety, the Ministry of Public Safety on all firearms-related matters. He also co-chairs the Federal Hunting and Angling Advisory Panel, which was created by PM Harper in 2012 as a resource to advise the federal government on conservation, hunting, and fishing issues. Thanks very much for joining us today, Greg. Welcome to the studio.
It's my pleasure, Dave. Thank you.
Very glad to have you in here. Now, we're going to be talking about some local issues as well, but let's, if we can, introduce you to the listeners and maybe give them a little information on how you became who you are with the Ontario Association of Anglers and Hunters.
Well, it's back in 2001, they approached me, having run into me over the years in different government capacities, and asked me if I was interested in coming aboard, and they created a position, and I was happy to accept it, and I've been there ever since, so it's coming up on 14 years.
Wow. So you're dealing with government policy as it relates to hunting and fishing and other conservation-related aspects?
All aspects of hunting, fishing-related issues, firearms issues, but also all the conservation issues that we get involved in, everything from seasons and species and restoration, habitat, all those things that the OFAH does.
Wow, so that's a lot of government policy. You've obviously got a background in government policy at one point in your career, right?
Correct. Yeah, I was a member of political staff at government from 85 to 2001 before I joined the Federation.
So you know your way around the red tape, I guess.
We try.
So that's a good segue into what we wanted to talk about today, which was the recent presentation of amended bylaws related to hunting in Port Hope, Wards 1 and Ward 2. And so I know that you were someone from your organization was at the meeting last Tuesday, did a presentation. Maybe could you frame it from your perspective as to what's being presented and what the issues are?
Sure. The OFAH was first notified back in 2012 that Port Hope was reviewing some old bylaws, in particular their discharge bylaw. We contacted the municipality, offered our assistance and suggestions to them. In June of 2013, they asked us if we'd be interested in meeting with other stakeholders and the municipality to discuss what was being proposed at that time. Fast forward today, to the best of our knowledge, the meeting at that time never occurred, or if it did, we certainly weren't invited or informed. In fact, what it appears at the council meeting on July the 7th, there was some sort of consultation, but not with us and not certainly with local residents who will be impacted upon by any changes in the bylaw. So over the last decade, the OFAH has been involved in over 80 discharge bylaws across the province, working with municipalities to offer them advice and suggestions on everything from definitions and wording to making sure that they understand what provincial and federal laws are so that they don't overstep their authority and they don't unnecessarily encumber residents with red tape that doesn't need to be there.
Right, and a lot of these bylaws, now we should clarify, this was a bylaw, and what you're dealing with, as you say, as you deal with municipal governments, in a lot of cases are bylaws that are 30, 40, some of them 50, even 60 years old, and that haven't been upgraded, but because of amalgamations with the restructuring, if you will, of municipal bodies, they're now incorporating areas that would have been considered rural where these issues would not have been as impactful as they are now when we're talking about municipalities, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's incumbent upon all municipalities, obviously, and everybody understands municipalities have to go back and look at old bylaws, particularly when there's been amalgamation. I was working at the City of Toronto when the amalgamation occurred in 1997, and it's still a nightmare today trying to figure out, and they're still trying to figure out some of the things there that they haven't yet pulled all together into one bylaw. And that's, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's understandable. Councils are there to do due diligence to ensure that there are things there that are working the best they can. In the context of some of these discharge bylaws, they've been around since the early 60s. And you're quite right. Back then, you had a very rural community and a more urban one that have now been combined. And there's a clash of cultures, if you will, between the two bylaws. And so they've, you know, over the years, they try to update these things and bring them into modern times, which is what's happening here.
So why do you call it a discharge bylaw rather than, say, a gun control bylaw or a hunting control bylaw? Why discharge?
That's the terminology that municipalities use, the discharge of firearms. So they're all called discharge of firearms bylaws because you're dealing with where, when, how, what you can use to hunt or shoot recreationally, so they call them discharge bylaws.
Okay, so Port Hope has a really unique situation, and you know, we talked a little bit about it. The original bylaws, I believe, date back to the early 60s. Very distinct communities. Hope Township was a very rural community, very much farmland, the odd hamlet, but no urban area to speak of. You go there now, it's very different. Highway 28 is a busy highway. County Road 9 is a busy highway. There's a lot more buildings around, the increase of population. They're not big sprawling farms with, you know, acres and acres between homes. What are the issues that you guys face when you sit down at a table and start to talk about what it is that's got to be regulated?
Well, quite often these discharge bylaws or these reviews of discharge bylaws come about because you have people moving from urban areas out into areas like Port Hope or Cobourg or, you know,
even where you live, Camelford,
right? For instance. And they come from a completely different culture, and they're moving into an area where hunting or recreational shooting has been the norm for generations. And in fact, both provincial and federal legislation recognizes hunting as a heritage activity in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people have been passing it down from generation to generation, hunting their own property or neighbors' properties or family properties. And you start to get some of these urban enclaves that pop up in rural areas like this. And there's a bit of a clash of cultures because they come from an area where firearms mean somebody's been shot on the street in Toronto, mm-hmm. as opposed to somebody's hunting a deer or shooting a turkey or protecting their crops and livestock from predators like coyotes or wolves or mm-hmm. whatever. And quite often these discharge bylaws are predicated because you have well-meaning people who come to council and say, you know, I've heard gunshots or I'm afraid because I hear shooting and whatnot. And that creates this snowball effect. And, mm-hmm. and what we have to do is go in and help to educate councils to the realities of, you know, what it exactly is that they're dealing with. In Clarington, when they were dealing with theirs going back 13 years ago, it was based on one complaint of somebody who heard a gunshot and thought it was right behind their house. And in fact, when the police investigated, it was a hunter 3 miles away, but the sound carries. And these folks came in thinking that, you know, oh, we're in danger, mm-hmm. our kids are in danger. The fact is that if you look at the statistics, the National Safety Council, the Canadian Safety Council, Statistics Canada have done studies on this. Hunting accidents are 0.001%. in this country. That's less than accidents for swimming, for boating, for golf, and you're more likely to get hit by a car, bitten by an insect, or struck by lightning than you are to encounter a hunter or have any kind of issues like that. Hunting is safe. Going back to the 60s, the OFAH worked with the province of Ontario to bring in the Hunter Education Safety Program, which has an impeccable record. There's over 450,000 licensed hunters at any given time in the province. The program for the last 10 years has been churning out record numbers, 25,000 a year of new hunters. And we're seeing a real shift in the demographics now because a lot of them are women and a lot of them are mm-hmm. youth. So there's a lot of new people coming into this, into, you know, hunting as a pastime, as a heritage activity. And it is one of the safest things you can possibly do.
That makes complete sense if, say, we're talking about far up north or areas where there's large tracts of land. And yet, when you look at some place like Port Hope, especially Ward 2, there's a lot of major routes. There's a lot more population, density, and housing. I was on a piece of property the other day. A guy was explaining to me he built a pond so that he could hunt. And yet, right behind that pond, 1,000 yards away, was County Road 28, the former Highway 28, and there's tons of traffic going up, down, and whatever. I know that there's a great debate about, you know, the size of lots that people can go on. What is reasonable in all of this? Because, you know, certainly no one's going to argue people have the heritage and there's a culture out here. Mm-hmm. But how do we balance that when you have a house only 1,000 yards away or a major highway 1,000 yards away?
Okay. The Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry is the controlling department or ministry in Ontario that controls hunting under the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act, the hunting regulations, and the fishing regulations. They have more rules and regulations in place, not only that governs what you can hunt, where you can hunt, what you can hunt it with, at what time of the year, what species, what gender, how many you can take, but also they have place, you know, things in place like buffer zones from sides of roads, which is 8 meters, you know, and you see some councils, including this one, who are looking at buffer zones of 200 meters or 300 meters. And what we have to educate councils to quite often is don't reinvent the wheel. There's tons of legislation in this country already. There's the Criminal Code. There's the Firearms Act. There's the Trespass to Property Act. There's the Protection of Property Act. There's the Fish and Wildlife Conservation Act. There's all sorts of acts out there already that govern the use, transportation, storage, discharge of firearms in Canada anywhere, let alone here. Don't duplicate the efforts.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a quick break, listeners. My guest in the studio is Greg Ferrand. He is the manager of the Government Policy and Affairs for the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. Also joining me this afternoon is Rob Washburn, who is doing our live version of Consider This. It is Wednesday, after all. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be right back. Welcome back to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. My guests in the studio are Mr. Greg Ferrand. He is with the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. We've been talking about bylaw amendments, as municipal bylaws. One of the things you and I talked about before we went to air is this idea of firearms being referred to as weapons. And I mean, that's sort of getting to the concern that a lot of people are having when they're moving from municipalities that are high density, essentially urban centers, to low density rural centers where people have greater access to firearms. And the concern that people have as they move from these municipalities, of course, they move generally because of increased violence, and they're leaving because of, you know, what they see as gun violence. And so they don't. I mean, how do you countenance that when you're dealing with people who are moving into these areas like Campbellford, for instance, and they're concerned about, say, for instance, this guy with his duck pond firing 1,000 yards from the Highway 28?
Well, again, a lot of it goes to public education, and we do an awful lot to try and educate public, including municipal councils, when issues like this come forward, both on Sunday gun hunting issues and discharge bylaws, about the safety record in this province of legal, law-abiding, licensed hunters. I mean, when you're hunting in Ontario, you've had to take a hunter safety course. You've had to take the Canadian Firearms Safety course. If you're hunting turkeys, you've had to take a separate wild turkey course. You know what you're doing out there. You know, the safety record speaks for itself. The statistics over the last 40 years have been impeccable in terms of the number of incidents, and the one or two incidents a year that we see in Ontario are not hunters interacting with the public. It's hunter interacting with hunter. If there's an error, there's an error made between two hunters, not with the members of the public. I mean, the safety record of people who hunt and who recreational shoot in this province is just, you know, you can't surpass it. And when these bylaws come forward, there's a lot of times they come forward based on innuendo. They come forward based on fears or speculation. And what we say to municipal councils is take a look at the fact-based issues. Mm-hmm. How many complaints have been registered with the municipality or with the police, whether it's the OPP or a local municipal force like the Port Hope Force or Cobourg Police? How many charges were laid as a result of that? How many convictions were obtained? And when you look at those numbers, you find that they're horrifically low, other than what people think.
But is there not is there not eventually space, as sprawl occurs, space is going to be lost, and hunters are going to have to find other places to go? I mean, isn't this just a natural part of the evolution that hunters should accept?
There is some, but quite often you will see municipalities, and for instance, if you see approved plans of subdivisions, that subdivision may not be built for 20 years, and yet they attempt to bring it into their discharge bylaw now. Well, people could still be hunting out there quite safely because there are no homes there now. It's still open fields. It's still forests. But because it's now an approved plan of subdivision, the municipality includes it in their discharge bylaw. And we go to councils and go, look, if there's houses being built there now, you know, if there's shovels in the ground, okay. But you're not going to put shovels in the ground for 10 years, for 15 years. And people have been hunting this area for, you know, 100 years. Until you get to that stage, let's not, you know, overreact here.
But why is it so important to keep that toehold? Why not just say, okay, look, there the subdivision's coming in. We're not going to hunt there. We've got lots of other places we can go and hunt. Why don't we go hunt there?
But that's the problem. I mean, in southern Ontario, most of the land, we don't have a lot of crown land in southern Ontario like they do in northern Ontario, where you can go and hunt on crown land, right? We have private lands, and we depend on private landowners to facilitate hunting on their properties, right? And as these farms disappear and as municipalities and expand their borders and as more subdivisions crop up, there are less and less opportunities for people in southern Ontario to hunt in areas where they traditionally hunt. You also, you know, municipal councils have to be careful, too, not to overexpand when they're dealing with these issues because they can inadvertently, and I say inadvertently, create more public safety issues by expanding the discharge bylaw too much. And I'll give you a good example of that, okay? In areas where there's high deer populations and you bring in a very restrictive discharge bylaw, what that can happen is the deer population explodes. Right now in this province, we have over 15,000 deer car collisions a year. We have one every 36 minutes somewhere in Ontario. There's a deer car collision happening. This costs millions upon millions of dollars in terms of insurance claims, injuries to people, injuries to the wildlife, and there's a sustainability issue. And the MNR, when they're looking at what species you can hunt and how many and when and whatnot, it's all based on science. It's based on the habitat that these animals are existing in and what that habitat can sustain, how many numbers it can sustain, how much browse is there for the animals. And you will find when there's a failure of that policy, you end up with culls. And culls are a very unpopular public events where you go in and shoot as many animals as you possibly can in a very short period of time to try and cut back on the numbers there because they're overabundant and the resources can't sustain them. Hunting is the most valuable wildlife management tool that MNR has. They say that. It's in their policy documents. And without hunting, how are you going to control some of these wildlife populations?
So we've been noticing in the news in the last couple of weeks that there's been couples complaining about coyotes coming into town, eating little dogs, cats,
cougars,
this kind of things.
We've had some cougar sightings as well.
So is that what you're saying then? Is that part of that management is through hunting?
That's correct. And you will know that, many years ago, a provincial government canceled the spring bear hunt. They didn't cancel the spring bear hunt on the basis of science. They canceled it because threats were made against them, political threats were made against them, and they caved into it. We now see more bears on the landscape than ever before. In fact, to the point where in a lot of north and near north municipalities, they've become a public safety issue, appearing in schoolyards, on streets, and backyards. You've seen bear things in Newmarket recently and other places. And this is a result of overabundant wildlife that's not held in check because hunting seasons have been affected or hunting has been stopped in certain areas. Look, it's, you know, bylaws and discharge bylaws like the one that Port Hope is going to bring back in September, and full marks to them for deferring it until September and for more consultation, and good for the council and good for the mayor to recognize that there needs to be more discussion about it. And I give them full marks on that. But, you know, councils need to understand that there are repercussions to every decision that you make. And if you start getting overly restrictive, there's going to be a quid pro quo that results on the end. And in many cases, it can be too many coyotes, it can be too many bears, too many deer, too many whatever. And MNR's policies are in place and their hunting regulations are in place for a reason, and they're based on sound science, and they're based on controlling those populations to optimal and sustainable levels. And when you start monkeying around with that, you start monkeying around with what happens to the population and how it impacts on people.
How do we allay the fears, though, of people who are moving to these once, you know, rural areas that are now becoming more and more urban? How do we allay the fears, though, of people who are moving to those areas who are afraid of guns? They're flat out afraid of guns. I mean, you're talking about educating people and talking about, you know, the number of deaths, and, you know, you're more likely to be injured by hitting a deer than you are to be a hunter, to be quite frank. That's basically what you're saying. I mean, is there a way you can convince people that, you know, well, we realize you're concerned, but your concerns are baseless?
Well, that's why we go in and talk to councils and educate councils, and we talk to them. You know, a few years ago, the OFH produced a pamphlet called Responsible Hunting, mm-hmm. and we sent thousands of these out to every municipality in the province for them to put on their counters, and it talks about how hunters are trained, what they do, why they do it, where they're doing it. And look, we all recognize that there is going to come a, you know, there's a push comes to shove sometimes, and there is, you know, population growth, and you have to start making accommodations for that. You know, if councils need to put in a buffer zone around an educational facility or a hospital or a senior's residence, everybody understands that. That makes common sense. But don't go crazy with those and start talking about buffer zones of 300 meters when you may be in an area where you are hunting with shotguns and bows only, for instance, mm-hmm. where the limit on that's like 40 yards. So why do you need a 300 meter buffer when what you're allowed to hunt with there only goes 40 yards? It makes no sense.
We got a caller online. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, yeah, I'd like to ask Rob a question.
All right.
Why does it seem that everyone has to change to accommodate the people that are moving into an area? You can't close an airport because, you know, you build a house beside the airport. You know, they have racetracks where people move in and then they start complaining about the noise. We have a rural area where people hunt. You got to know that that's going to be going on when you move there. Why is it that those that are already there always seem to have to change for the newcomers? Why is that the attitude?
Well, that's a good question. What do you think, Rob?
I'm asking Rob. Yeah, he seems to think that.
Well, Ed, I think that's why should it be any other way? Because would be my response. How do we balance these rights? Everybody, we're seeking a balance, are we not?
Well, okay, I would agree, but a fair balance is not eliminating one side. That's not a fair balance. You know, that's not being equal or whatever. And you know, I mean, I know we're talking about hunting today, and that's very important. I got another comment on that. But, you know, the idea is if you move into an area, you're moving into that area. Those people have been doing stuff one way or whatever for years and years and years. Why should you be able to come in there and just make everybody change because you're afraid?
You know, if I'm a tax-paying citizen and I'm making my contribution to the municipality, I should have an equal say with others who also pay taxes and have an equal voice.
Why
am I being denied an equal voice?
Equal voice is fine. That equal is fine. I got no problem with equal, but okay. It never ends up being equal.
Well, what you're saying, Ed, if I can understand this correctly, is that what tends to happen is the newer voices, if you will, the new residents, their voices tend to have more weight than long-term residents. Is that something you would...
Absolutely. That's the way it seems to be.
It does happen quite often. Now, in the case of Port Hope, for instance, though, there were hundreds of people that signed petitions to council that weren't originally consulted when they were talking to the police and the Conservation Authority and the MNRF. Mm-hmm. The local people, residents, stakeholders, people who hunt and live here and pay taxes here just like everybody else does, you know, you're to your point about taxpayers, well, these hunters and recreational shooters are taxpayers too, and many of them have been generational taxpayers in this municipality, and hundreds of them signed petitions to council, and they packed the council chamber. They were in the hallways, in the stairwells. Yep. I mean, it was a full house. So obviously they want their voices heard. They deserve to have their voices heard. And, you know, kudos to the council for recognizing that they mm-hmm. need to back up on this a little bit and take another run at it in September and give the opportunity for people to have their say.
Well, do we agree with the premise, though, that newcomers and their voices tend to be louder than long-term residents? Is that something we're going to agree on? I don't know that that's necessarily true, to be honest with you. I don't know that I would necessarily agree with that. I know.
I go by the number of things. Like, I'm into cars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people build houses, subdivisions, and everything beside a racetrack, and then all of a sudden the racetrack has to close because they say it's too noisy.
Right.
Okay, well, they built their house there, you know, or they moved there. Mm-hmm. They knew it was going to be noisy. You get farmers who have problems with people because the machinery's noisy. You know, like, this is what I don't understand. Like, and this hunting thing falls into the same situation. I'm sure there's not guys running up and down the street with guns, you know, in front of people's houses. You know, they wouldn't do that. They're, you know, they're adequately schooled and everything else. They know what the difference is. But just because someone has, oh my God, I'm afraid of a gunshot, does that mean everybody has to quit?
I think this is really an interesting point, because I think there's been a real paradigm shift since the firearm registry, the Federal Firearm Registry, was introduced many years ago, where hunters now are very sensitive to any issue that threatens their hobby or their ability to own firearms. How would you care? Is that true in your experience? I know you've worked on this kind of legislation.
Yeah, well, when Bill C-68 was introduced by the Liberals back in the mid-90s, it came out of the blue, and it was very onerous. And what it basically did was it assumed that firearms owners were not responsible, or firearms owners needed to be controlled. Well, we had firearms acquisition certificates before then for, you know, 20 years, and it worked just fine, thanks very much. You know, the local police signed off on your FAC. They know everybody in the community. All of a sudden, C-68 comes in, and it's now become this giant bureaucracy. You know, Alan Rock, when he introduced it, said it's going to cost $19 million or whatever the figure mm-hmm. was that he used, and $2 billion later of taxpayers' money, and it didn't do a damn thing for keeping anybody safe. It did not one thing for keeping, it didn't solve one crime, one gun crime anywhere. And you had police chiefs admitting to that. You know, the problem in this country is not the legal, licensed, law-abiding firearm owner who goes through the courses and knows how to handle their firearms. It's the importation of illegal firearms, a lot of the time handguns from the U.S. If you talk to former Chief Bill Blair, during the gun registry debate, he admitted that 55% of the guns on the streets of Toronto came from the U.S. and they were smuggled in, 90% in Vancouver. So people come from a culture like that where there are gangbangers killing each other on the streets, you know, indiscriminately shooting, you know, into coffee shops and stuff like that. They come out here, and as this gentleman, as Ed is pointing out, it's like the people who, you know, Pearson Airport was there. It was there a long, Malton Airport, and Pearson mm-hmm. Airport had been there a long time. They build subdivisions next to the airport, and all of a sudden everybody's going, well, it's too noisy. Well, what the heck did you expect was going to happen?
Well, it's like the same it's like train whistles, right?
Yeah, I mean,
the
or best recreational example. Shooting ranges, or, as Ed has pointed out, even farmers running combines or corn dryers, and people mm-hmm. are going, it's too loud.
Well, but I think though, is it not, though, that hunters seem hypersensitive? I mean, the fact that so many people came out last week to this, I mean, obviously there was a problem to it, but has the registry and other actions, have we created more of a problem where we, you know, we need to sit down and have common sense, intelligent conversations about these things, and how do we balance rights? I think people have a right to feel safe, and people have a right to hunt. Yeah. So how do we balance that?
But
how
again,
does that happen?
Again,
well, my question there would be, who is making up these rights? Is it somebody in, you know, downtown Toronto in an office building? Who is making up these laws? Why?
Or is it the National Gun National Rifle Association
exactly
in the United States?
On the other side, exactly. Where is the balance there? Who made up the Port Hope bylaws? Like, what gun consultants were done? What you know? Who made these changes and whatnot? And then it blows up.
So generally speaking, when municipal discharge bylaws come forward, it's municipal staff, generally enforcement, bylaw enforcement staff, who are the ones who are crafting the original bylaws, right? Every municipality is different. Some of them will call you right at the beginning and say, let's sit down. This is where we're going. What are your suggestions? Others don't
you know, you don't hear about it until it suddenly it hits a council agenda, and then you've got to hurry up and try and respond to it, and then you're trying to get them to back up from something that they put in there that if you'd had the chance, and I mean, you know, to talk to them earlier, it wouldn't be in there in the first place. You know, this is why the federal government has a firearms advisory committee that advises the federal public safety minister on firearms-related issues, so that there's a balance there between what the RCMP sees and you know, from a policing aspect, to what the industry sees, to what, you know, people on the ground see, people who recreational shoot and hunt and whatnot, and that's where your balance is struck. The reason so many hunters came out to this is because, again, in southern Ontario, our land masses, you know, of private land is what we have to hunt on. And when those opportunities, access to opportunities is everything. And for future generations, it's going to become even more and more critical for people who want to hunt as we get more and more suburbanized in southern Ontario. And so these hunters are saying, you know, we deserve representation. And if you're going to listen to the fears of urbanites, we need to be heard too. And clearly, it's an important issue to them, just by the numbers that showed up.
Well,
at council.
I hope that answered your question, Ed.
Yeah, no, I'm good. Thank you.
All right.
Much.
Well, thank you very much for your call.
And everybody else, appreciate the opportunity to vent.
Thanks.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come right back with more of this conversation. You're listening to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio. Welcome back to The Drive Time here on Northumberland 89.7. My guest is a representative from the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters, Mr. Greg Ferrant, and Rob Washburn, who is a professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. We were talking, we got a couple of good questions there from Ed, so thanks for giving us a call. Our lines are still open at 905-372-2321, so give us a call anytime. Now, you were talking about the Public Safety Ministry, and they've set up a panel to look at guns or to look at firearms in this country. There has been a lot of concern, and mostly from lefties, folks like myself, for instance, who think that these committees tend to be weighted in the favor of gun advocates. You know, we talked about the National Rifle Association, but there's a similar association to that here in Canada. And nowhere in the Charter of Rights and Freedoms does it say that we have the right to bear arms.
Okay, well, let me be real clear. Any discussion of the NRA in Canada doesn't wash. The NRA doesn't have a presence in the discussions or in the debates here in Canada. The people that sit on that firearms committee, and I'll give you a flavor for it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's three police officers. There's the two heads of a police union and a staff sergeant who's a head of a homicide squad in Saskatoon. So you've got three police officers.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Linda Tom. Linda Tom is a gold medal pistol shooter at the Olympics who won a gold medal for Canada. You've got myself representing a conservation-based organization. You have an RCMP officer and somebody from the Canadian Firearms Center who is responsible for firearms policy in this country.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a bunch of people who are just, you know, crazies out on the streets shooting up the night. These are people who have a great deal of experience with firearms. You've got a representative from Nova Scotia, from Vancouver. You've got a professor from Simon Fraser University on it. So the 10 members of that advisory committee have a long history of knowledge of firearms, what they do, what they stand for, what they look like, how they operate, and they are the people that are advising this current government. The previous government, the Liberal government, under Mr. Chrétien, they had a firearms advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
On that committee were a bunch of police officers, anti-gun advocates, and one person who was a pro-gun advocate.
Mm-hmm.
It was heavily weighted against the firearms community. So the current government has tried to balance that a little bit with having some law enforcement officers on there who, you know, chiefs of police and homicide officers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the officers who are saying to the government, when the gun registry debate was going on, this damn thing didn't help us a bit. You know, any officer who would go to the door and base their approach to the door on the information in the long gun registry
mm-hmm.
is a fool. So, you know, that was part of the reason why the government felt comfortable in getting rid of it, because that kind of advice was provided to
them. So it is a more balanced panel then, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it is, yeah.
But I have a point that I think is important, and that is that, you know, maybe you're right. The bureaucracy sounds like it's in place and it's meant to do good things, but still there's a bleed-off effect, and I think that there's a lot of hunters and gun owners who will turn to you and talk to you very directly about their right their rights to have a gun, to a right to do this, a right to do that. And it sounds very much like the same kind of rhetoric that you hear out of from the United States, from the NRA. And I wonder sometimes if there isn't some cultural bleed over.
No, I don't. I don't really believe that, frankly. Okay. You know, I deal with firearms people across this country, with organizations in every province and every territory, either through the Hunting and Angling Advisory Panel or through CFAC. And I don't see that bleed over. We do have a couple of organizations in this country that represent a smaller segment of firearms owners who are what I would classify, with all due respect, as a little more right-wing and a little more radical. But they have no appearance of what the NRA is all about in the U.S. We don't have that kind of politics. We don't have that kind of rhetoric in this country. We certainly don't have a constitution with an amendment in there that guarantees our right to bear arms. People might like to think that individually, but we all know what the Constitution says, and it does not. I mean, it's a privilege. It's not a right in under our Constitution like it is under the Second Amendment in the U.S. But the gun culture there and the gun culture here in Canada are completely different animals.
But your organization will argue that there is a heritage aspect to it. We don't talk about it in terms of constitution. We talk about it in terms of heritage. And it's framed always in terms of we have traditionally done this and we've traditionally done that. And I guess what I wonder sometimes is how do we balance that off with the modern culture, which does have a certain sense of gun ownership and a very different view of maybe that kind of heritage. And how do we balance that out?
Well, let me respond to that by, first of all, pointing out the fact that in Canada, hunting, fishing, trapping were the foundations of this country. They were the economic drivers of this country and to a large extent still are in many cases when this country was founded. They were part of the original staples of the staples economy that Innes talked about, that we all studied at university.
Yep.
And the staples economy is still alive and well here. These were the foundations of our original economy in this country. They have been around for hundreds of years, 400 years in this country, roughly, where people hunt, trap, and fish. I also want to point out that hunters and recreational sports shooters, let's remember, we're not just talking about people in Coburg or Campbellford or whatnot. We're talking about people in downtown Toronto. We're talking about, like, former Liberal leader Bill Graham, huge hunter. We're talking about judges. We're talking about librarians. We're talking about pharmacists. We're talking about doctors. We're talking about people from all walks of life hunt, fish, recreational shoot in this province. It's not just a case of, you know, Joe local from the local farm or the local small municipality. There are just as many people in the city of Toronto who own firearms and are hunters. Then you would, you know, everybody thinks hunters are in Northern Ontario. Most of the people that are hunting in Northern Ontario are largely from the South that go north to hunt. And they're from places like Ottawa and London and Toronto and Kitchener and Waterloo and Windsor. There's a hell of a, you know, OFH has 100,000 members, supporters, and subscribers. And a large majority of those folks are in what we consider Southern or Southwestern Ontario. And they come from all walks of life. So it's not just the guy in the local community or the local farmer. And you know, when mentioning farmers, you have to also remember, farmers have a right to protect their property. They always have had that right to protect their property. And hunters are there as agents or facilitators to help control the populations that are threatening crops and livestock.
But farmers also have the right to sell parts of their land, which they do to get income, and then people build homes on them, and we have that development taking place. So,
and it's a domino effect.
Yeah.
And what we're all we are saying in terms of when we go forward to councils and we talk about these bylaws is, let's find the middle ground here. Let's not, you know, go too far to the right. Let's not go too far to the left. Yes, if you need to put some buffer zones in, or for instance, right now we're looking at one in Kirkland Lake, and we're looking at one in Whitchurch-Stouffville. And Whitchurch-Stouffville is a good example. They've added a bunch of little parcels to their current discharge bylaw. We understand about two-thirds of the ones that they're adding because there are now subdivisions there where they weren't before. And we're not going to sit and argue that you should be, you know, hunting in a subdivision quite clearly. But again, Whitchurch-Stouffville is a good example of a municipality that has also identified some areas for future development that may not be developed for 15 or 20 years that we're going to go to them and argue this is too early to add this in. People are still hunting there. They're still hunting safely, and there's no public safety issue. So.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. Well, we're just about ready to wrap it up here, but I wanted to take this moment to thank Greg here, because one of the things we talked about during the break was this is the conversation that we want to have at the council when we're discussing these bylaws and these changes to bylaws. It's this type of conversation where not everybody in the room necessarily gets along, but we get it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not sort of this, because what we see out there in the mainstream media is this diametrically opposed situation where you've got Ted Nugent on one side and, you know, maybe Jerry Garcia on the other side, some peace-loving groovy guy who doesn't necessarily want to be a part of it, who says, well, we shouldn't have any guns at all. But as you say, I mean, maybe it's not a right, but it is definitely part of our heritage. Now, we do have one more caller online, and hopefully we'll be able to take this, but we are going to wrap it up very shortly. Go ahead, Jason, you're on the line.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
There's a few things that I heard that I was a little concerned about. Was the one person said they to feel safe. There's a difference between feeling safe and being safe. The one gentleman said that, you know, how do people feel safe? Well, you can never, ever make people feel safe. But the statistics prove that hunting, target shooting, is statistically safe.
Right.
So it doesn't matter how people feel. You can never make people feel a certain way. It's in their head how they feel. The other part that I wanted to bring up, that Mr. Ferrant said, that farmers have a right to protect their crops and all that. Actually, it's every person has a right to protect their property. From mm-hmm. wildlife animals, if they're attacking their house or their land.
All right.
For deer, bear, moose, and elk.
Mm-hmm. And some good points. As a matter of fact, the Prime Minister remarked on that very issue a few months ago when he was talking about how people in rural areas, sometimes you don't have access to immediate emergency services. It may take you a couple hours to get the police. So he actually said this, that there are people out there that are protecting themselves that way as a result. So I think that goes to what you're saying, doesn't it, Jason?
Yeah, exactly. And also to bring up another point, the Ganaraska Conservation Authority has, I don't know how many thousands of acres of land in the area. And hunters, campers, bikers, mm-hmm. horse people have cohabitated out on that land for over 17, I was talking to a gentleman today, over 17 years. There's never been a firearms incident, accident, disturbance on mm-hmm. anybody.
So thank you for your call, Jason. Appreciate it. Are you a hunter yourself?
Yes, I am. I'm actually the one that drafted the petition that got me and my daughter drafted the petition and got it signed by, I think it was close to 600 people.
Okay. Well, congratulations for that, and thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Not a problem.
Thanks for your call. So there you go. Some really good points, some salient points, and I think he drives home the message that fear is, quite frankly, in a lot of cases, well, most cases, something irrational. And that's that you can't rationalize away a genuine fear. Would you agree with that?
I would say yes. Too bad use of language. I think we all need to not just feel safe, but be safe. And that's the big thing.
There you go. Well, I want to thank my guests for being in today and for having this conversation. Greg Ferrant is the Manager of Government Policy and Affairs for the Ontario Federation of Anglers and Hunters. They are the largest conservation-based organization in Ontario, the voice of anglers and hunters across the province. Mr. Ferrant currently chairs the Canadian Firearms Advisory Committee that advises the Federal Minister of Public Safety on all firearms-related matters. He's also the co-chair of the Federal Hunting and Angling Advisory Panel, which was created by PM Harper in 2012 as a resource to advise the federal government in conservation, hunting, and fishing issues. Greg, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure.
And Rob, always a pleasure to have you here. Here's John Lennon, watching the wheels.
People say I'm crazy. Save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. People say I'm lazy, dreaming my life away. Well, they give me all kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. watching shadows on the wall. Don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball. I'm just sitting here watching the wheels go round and round. I really love to watch them roll. No longer riding on the merry-go-round.
I just had to.